You teared up because the barista screwed up your order. You finished a pint of fudge ripple ice cream in front of the freezer. You yelled at your desk neighbor, Leslie, for breathing too loud. This time, don't go and buy another box of tampons. Question what you thought you knew about periods. Question what you buy, what you use, what the usual way, right way is to deal with it. Revolutionize. Switch it up. Try the Diva Cup and see how it can make dealing with your period a whole lot better.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Jurassic Talk Radio. Join host Todd Jurassic as he explores the great outdoors and the great unknown. Here we go.
Hey, welcome everybody to Jurassic Park Radio. This is one of my beginning shows here, and I have a great guest tonight, renowned Bigfooter, author, researcher, world explorer, owner of probably some of the greatest Bigfoot recordings ever, the Sierra Sounds, Ron Moorhead. Ron, you there?
I am. How are you?
Great. It's great. I'm a little nervous talking to you. It's kind of like you're right in that echelon right below Bob Gimlin, so I'm going to tell you what, 45 years of plus of research. It's exciting, you know, being involved. It's got to be exciting being at the beginnings and just being able to see and experience everything you've seen and stuff. So anyhow, great to have you on. I wanted to ask you just kind of start it is what got you started in the realm of Bigfoot?
Well, actually, I was part of a hunting group in the Sierra Nevada Mountains of California. And actually, these creatures way back in the wilderness, 8 miles into a real imposing area where their camp was. And I say there because the camp had been there since the 50s. And I didn't start going until 71. And that's when the creatures began. It's when they came out and talked. I wasn't a hunter at the time, but that's what they did when you went up there, was hunted. And I became a hunter after that because I wanted to be part of the group and experience these creatures. But they weren't looking for Bigfoot. These things came around. They thought it was just a big bear to start with. And they came out and told us a story. And we started going back up there. And the creatures started coming back more. And we started taking recorders and recorded them. It wasn't until a year later when we got a hold of, Al Berry, an investigative reporter, got a hold of us and wanted to interview us. So he came down. And he thinking it was a hoax. He got a letter from a man named Peter Byrne who had received it from Ivan Sanderson, a renowned cryptozoologist. And anyway, they all thought it was just incredible. These things don't do what we were saying they were doing. And that's how I got involved, really. I went up, I was friends with these guys, but I wasn't, like I say, before that, I wasn't really a hunter. But started going up there, and this went on for a few years. In fact, it's still something going on up there. I was just up there last year. But we think it's a habitat of these things, and I try to keep the location as confidential as possible just because I don't want to inundate it with Bigfoot hunters or Bigfoot people. It's just a really pristine area, and I guess the Johnson family, who still visits the place in the hunting season, wants to keep it that way as long as possible.
Yeah, that's amazing. So there, I mean, finding a... anything like that, I mean, I tell you what, you've got to keep a lid on because people are looking, I guess, to jump your Bigfoot claim. So, but how many times do you think you guys have gone up there? Did you guys go? Have you been up there all the years? How much time have you actually spent in the woods up there?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I haven't kept track of that. I used to go up every year, and I still try to. I didn't go this year because of I just couldn't get away, but I did last year and the year before. I've been going up a lot in the earlier years when these things were real active with us up there. We'd go up as often as we'd get away. I had my own businesses in the San Joaquin Valley, so I was able to cover myself and just took off. Very exciting, and still is. Very exciting chapter in my life. So it's been quite a whirlwind, really. I've been all over you mentioned in the introduction, been down into up South America and Russia and Siberia, Nepal, researching basically the enigmas associated with these things. The sagittal crest is what really got me into South America. The elongated skulls that are found down there, which were hybrid beings.
Yeah, that was something I definitely want to talk to you about, because I saw you actually and I was shocked, because I met you in September. I mean, July at the Olympic Bigfoot Project, and I didn't know that you knew Joe Taylor, who I've known for years but just hadn't talked to in a while. And I saw you on L.A. Marzulli's Watchers video, all three of you down in with the Paracas skulls, and I think it was Watchers 9. So I was laughing. I was like, it's the small world you live in. I guess when you believe in search for crazy stuff, it kind of all connects you at some point. At least this particular subject seems to do that. But my guess is that when you go in there all the time, and since you've been there for years, these things probably know who you are. And I guess that's, and they know you're not there to hurt them. And so maybe you would think after a while they'd give you some, closer access to them. But from what I've been reading in your book, your brand new book, Quantum Bigfoot, is awesome. I mean, after a while, I've been involved off and on in Bigfoot stuff for 20 plus years, and some of it you can't wrap your head around, and it's like I can't just throw out what I've seen, what I've experienced, the evidence I've seen, just because it makes me uncomfortable and makes me question my paradigm. And your book I'm sure there's people that just don't want to hear anything of it, but, you've seen what you've seen, you've experienced what you've experienced, you've been doing this almost 50 years. After a while, you get some sense of it, and, some of the people that have been doing this the longest time, they may not outwardly say what you're saying in this book, but I think if you get them behind closed doors, I don't know how they can deny the evidence and things you ran into. But I want to get into that a little bit later. But so just real quickly, can you just go over the Sierra sounds? You recorded these amazing sounds that sound like talking. And I'll even go one farther. We were down in Monster Central, which is the old GCBR site, about 8 years ago, and my friend Chester was down there, and his voice, and just visiting the place and stuff. And I think it was my wife and his family heard Chester's voice, but it wasn't Chester. So these things can mimic, or the range of mimicry is unbelievable. And so if you can just talk just briefly, what you do with the Sierra sounds. A lot of people are familiar with that. You've talked about it 1,000 times. It's fascinating, amazing stuff. But
yeah, well, Professor Curlin at the University of Wyoming, where he was then, that was in 1978, did a year-long study on these sounds via Al Berry, who was a Rubisky reporter that we took into camp in 1972. And he thought these things have got to be accredited or denied or something. They just got to have some professor behind it, and that's what you need is a PhD behind whatever you've got for anybody to listen to it. And they did a study and showed in a graph in this book called Man-Like Monsters on Trial. It was produced at the Vancouver, British Columbia, in 1980, I think. Yeah, well, 1978 is when he introduced his analysis of the sounds. And he showed a graph in there, showed the human range, the average human range of a vocal mechanism is. And then he showed the graph of where these sounds came from. And they were above it. They were in it, and they were below it. So that suggested that they were great mimics of just about anything they wanted to. Plus, there was a lot of sounds that were in the human range that sounded very human-like. So that was quite encouraging, but it wasn't enough to win everybody over, but it was a big step forward in the credibility of the sounds. 2008, till we got a cryptolinguist retired from the Navy as a cryptolinguist, with thousands of hours under the hood listening to unknown languages, transcribing languages, who got a hold of me and Alan Berry in 2008. And he got the context behind the sounds, and we gave him the original sounds and all the stuff that went with it. And he analyzed it and said, these things have a language. By the human definition of language, that's very important to understand what language is by the human definition. And that's several words, 10 or 12 words that make a cognizant sentence. And that's what humans have, and it's only given to humans. Humans are the only ones that do that, supposedly, but these things do that. So that puts them in something, maybe a hybrid type of being, which I think they are. And after me seeing what I saw in Peru with L.A. and Joe Taylor down there, you know, that we had two scientists with us two different occasions and spent several weeks down there analyzing these skulls, and they were hybrids. They do not have the parietal, the dual parietal bones that we have in our head. These elongated skulls have a single parietal, and that's one bone on top of their head. And they're definitely hybrids. They're said to have a 30% more brain matter about. And we think that they were responsible for the huge megalithic structures that are in South America that today we can't figure out how anybody could have done what was done down there. These 100-ton boulders moved up on top of these mountains without a cementum put together like a jigsaw puzzle. Now, this kind of sounds like it's off the Bigfoot track, but it's not. I went down there because of the elongated head that a lot of people report on Bigfoot. And I wanted to see if maybe there could be something going on. And sure enough, I witnessed personally hybrid beings that had been on this planet. And so that kind of got me into Peru and made me, convinced me anyway, that there's something been here that some people just put their head in the sand, don't want to understand or look into it. But some of the mysteries associated with these creatures, I say creatures, they're beings. And I believe it would be part human, actually. And so there's, I kind of got off subject with you a little bit there, Todd.
No, that's fine. I was going to ask you about that later, but go for it. Just talk, because I was going to ask you that anyhow. And you know what? It's like a big circle. And it just, and then you go, and it's like, well, this is a, you know, I know we talked up in July up at the OBF, and, you know, and I thought you said it was interesting. You said that, you know, you thought some of these might be, you know, the biblical form of Nephilim. And for people that don't know what that is basically in the Bible, at least from the Bible standpoint, the DNA mankind was jacked up by the fallen angels, and they got punished for that. But there's, you know, over the years and centuries and thousands of years, these things have, you know, have evolved with these characteristics in them. But some of these, but you felt like some of these were, you were telling me, I think you felt maybe some of these were actually animals, some lesser Nephilim. And it's like a big knot. It's hard to untwine, but it's fascinating. But, you know, so, you know, go ahead and talk about that. Just want to throw that in for.
I think there's different kinds of them. There are some that could be associated with the Nephilim, and that's why I was with L.A. Missoula down there, and Joe, he was on the trail of the Nephilim. That's what his books are about. And actually, scientifically establishing that the Nephilim were here, that hybrids have been here, crossed between fallen angels, or what's called aliens, just for the people who aren't into biblical terms. We'll call them aliens.
Yeah, sure. That's
same thing. But yeah, they inbred with human beings to corrupt the human genome. That would be to stop the Savior, here's another biblical term, Jesus, from coming and telling us how we can reconnect with what we lost. And we're still trying to learn that today. We all have this ability that Christ talked about, but we're not able to somehow reach it, or we haven't been doing it, which we need to do. And that's what we call being, quote unquote, saved. We're saved from falling apart. That's what I call it. And, anyway, it was a great trip. I got to know LA pretty well on a couple different trips down there, and Joe too. Joe's been with me on some other expeditions also. We went into the Lovelock Caves in Nevada and a couple times. And so he's a great guy.
Well, I know you mentioned that while you got Lovelock Cave up there. That I was reading in your book, where you had a picture of a giant hand on a ceiling, and all of a sudden it's gone. So, makes you wonder if the academics didn't have a part of that removal.
Well, it doesn't make me wonder, because it takes quite a bit of a process to get something removed that quickly, and anything that's a geological site protected. It had to be the BLM or somebody with some authority to do that. And well, first of all, let me back up a little bit. We don't know it was a handprint. It just looked like a handprint. And
yeah, it looked like a handprint to me, too.
You didn't see anything put their hand on it, so you don't know it was a handprint, but it sure looked like one. And I took L.A. up there to show it to him, and it was gone. And that's kind of interesting because it wasn't that much longer since we first seen it, Joe and I. And just kind of interesting how something like that could just go so fast. And I think
that's a bad windstorm.
Well, they don't. The BLM denies that there was ever giants in that cave, and yet the Paiute stand by it firmly. The Paiute Native Americans there, and they've taken all the artifacts. Well, I shouldn't say all the artifacts. All the bones, like the skulls and things like that, and they've taken them away. They're not even in the museums anymore. And that was the Smithsonian supposedly spent all that. So anyway, I'll tell you,
I would love to go in a time machine back in the 50s and 60s and just take a year off and drive around the world, or at least this country, and hit all the little roadside museums, because you know they were full of all kinds of weird stuff. And, I mean, just this crazy stuff. And, you know, I knew some people that had some roadside stuff, and it just had to be fascinating because they were just curious. You'd stop and get gas and get your pop, and, you know, all of a sudden you got a shrunken head or a giant skull maybe sitting in a jar in the window. But nowadays it's like there's been a washing and a cleaning of that. And there was actually a site in New Mexico, and I told the government people, they said, you better cover that up or it's going to, you know. And I went out there in 06. Real quickly, and I went out there, and they had a holiday. I didn't want to go on the property without getting the permits, so I waited. 3 months later, someone had taken a power sander to it in the middle of the woods, like you're carrying a power sander with you in your backpack. So, you know,
stuff like this. If it gets out, and that's why the government doesn't want it out, and it's just going to screw up the evolutionary. It's going to screw up Darwinism. It's going to put a real kink into biblical history. And it's going to cause a lot of rewriting of history books, which should be rewritten because they're not accurate.
No, but then there's a lot tied into that. But I thought that hand was fascinating. It's the first time I'd seen that. I thought it was interesting that Michelangelo's painting had the Edomites looking. They looked like Bigfoot. It was crazy. You had a blow up in your book of the Michelangelo's. I don't remember. It was something in the Sistine Chapel, and it had the Edomites, and they looked just like Bigfoot. They don't look like chimpanzees. They look like Bigfoot squashing a cave. And I thought that was
into my book.
Pretty interesting.
Different scenarios of how the Nephilim could still be here, or part of them anyway, or basically it doesn't have to be the Nephilim. It can be anything that's trying to corrupt the human genome. And that's brought about through Rebecca's womb, as my book talks about. One of the theories is when one came out hairy, Esau, and the other, Jacob, came out normal. And but as you know the story, if you do know the story, they got their birthright switched around by a clever mother. But Esau became the head of the Edomites up in Canaan and inhabited that land, which actually was where Goliath and his brothers were, in the land of the giants. And that's where the children of Israel went up in there. They found that they were inhabited by the Nephilim, the son of Anak. And that's after the flood. That's in Numbers 13:33. So how did they get here after the flood if they were all destroyed in the flood? That's my. I get into how that could have happened via Cain's descendants and Noah's wife's possibly carrying a recessive gene for the Nephilim. Or it could have been, there's several ways it can happen, because I think the dark side is just trying all the time to get a hold of the human genome. They want this Earth. This is a great planet, and we're all made in the image of God, and that's pretty unique, and we're not supposed to be messed with. We have dominion on the Earth, and
so if you explain just I'm listening. Well, you were saying that you were talking about quantum Bigfoot in the quantum theory. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get. What is the quantum theory? If you don't know.
Well, the quantum Bigfoot theory in my book is based on the fact that they are. I shouldn't say fact, but the premise that they are part alien, and they have their attributes, some of them anyway, through alien intervention into the human genome. And that's what my book's all about, is that's what gives them their abilities to do some of the things that I've personally witnessed. And a lot of people who reported to me over the 40-some-odd years have been talking to people about this. It used to be when they said they disappeared, I would just write them off and say, oh, these people belong to Looney Tunes or something. But anymore, I don't do that, because I think there is a way in the quantum physics realm that this can happen through vibrational levels. And we all are a vibration at the most minute level. We are, it's called the string theory. And you get right down to it, we're just energy like that. And energy can't die, according to Stephen Hawking. So that's what the book's about, is getting into the sciences behind some of the enigmas associated with Bigfoot. And it doesn't just say, well, I saw this thing disappear. It tells you how that could happen. And the studies that's been done on this through science, which established that. So I don't think it's a far stretch. I've been getting a lot of five-star reviews, in fact, just about all of them on Amazon, or five-star reviews on the book, and how it gets into the stuff that people have wondered about for so long. And I'm really glad I did it. I thought about this for a long time, because it's a lot of trouble writing a book, a lot of research in this book. The first book, my first book, Voices in the Wilderness, was my 40-year chronicle of doing this. And I produced that in 2012. And it's my story, my chronicle. It was easy to write. I just wrote down what happened, me and the other guys. And but this book, I quote Einstein, Tesla, Bohr, these famous physicists, and how spirituality and physics used to be on the same plane 100 years ago when these guys were looking into it. But classical science has deviated from that, and they've got their parameters set. And the parameters of their disciplines is set with having to show proof, having to show this. They have to have experiments, repeatable experiments. And you can't do that in quantum physics. The only way you prove something in quantum physics is through mathematics. You never see it. But according to the math in quantum physics, it's a lot possible that we're not seeing. In fact, we live in a three-dimensional world, and according to the math in quantum physics, there's at least 11, probably a multitude more. And the only way you disprove
it. Crazy.
Quantum, the only way you disprove
that's amazing.
It is by mathematically disproving it. And that's not been able to be done, mathematically disproving those dimensions. Now, religion will call those heaven. Quantum physics calls it dimensions. And there's the parallel that I see. So many parallels in what Christ even talked about in the red letter edition of the New Testament. You read all that and study it a little bit, and really it falls right into quantum physics, the way he did his miracles and everything. He said, we can do it. Whatever he did, he said, we can do, and yet none of us are walking on water, which I'd like to do someday, but we just haven't reached that point yet.
Probably do that in the Sea of Galilee, from understanding that it's pretty salty and stuff. But yeah, I could see where, you know, basically you're talking, there are laws that some of these things are operating in a higher law, and that doesn't mean that, you know, it's necessarily, you know, even what would be considered maybe magic or the occult. Not that we necessarily should be messing with it, and particularly, you know, the cultic side, but you're dealing with a different set of laws that we're not familiar with, and but yet are operating somehow. And I believe that for me as a Christian, that God set the law in place, and you're seeing things even from what you're talking about, miracles in the Bible, and some of the things that even some, whether it be ghosts, demons, or whatever the Bigfoot are, and that occasionally there's a law that you're seeing an operation that does not operate with what we're, you know, what we're taught, what we're used to, what is explainable, what is repeatable. So yeah, it's definitely interesting, because I know I've seen some stuff with Bigfoot. Not every time, And I've seen some weird stuff and experienced some weird stuff. And I know people that have in Bigfoot properties that have seen giant triangular UFOs. I mean, and yet I've heard, you know, I beat on a side of a railing and then get an answer with a railing deep in the woods. And then all of a sudden it's up on me within a few minutes. And you're thinking, is that Bigfoot really carrying a you know, trash can lid, or, you know, or a piece of a car with him? Or is he imitating me, or what? It's just, you know, until people get out, it's easy for the armchair critics to make fun of it. But someone like yourself has been doing this for decades and has seen and heard everything, has had time to process, time to experience, time to talk to all kinds of people. And some of the stuff's not too easily dismissed. I mean, I know I heard some stuff before and you wonder if these people are flat out nuts. But a lot of this stuff has, you know, there's laws in operation that are happening that cannot be easily just discredited other than, oh, well, I don't believe them. Because when you're experiencing them, like I had Stan Gordon on a couple weeks ago, and Stan has all kinds of crazy stuff happen on Chestnut Ridge in Pennsylvania. And, I mean, you're seeing all kinds of stuff, hearing all kinds of stuff, experiencing all kinds of stuff. These things are real, and there's a bunch of people that are experiencing them, and they're leaving physical evidence at times. Okay, something's going on. So I think that's where your book does a good job, and, you know, okay, maybe here's some science possibly behind this. And I think, you know, it carries weight because you're not just the guy, you know, Joe Blow like me just decides to write a book and's been out in the woods 2 minutes in the last year and a half. You know, you're talking from someone that's been, you know, a world traveler. You're trying to understand the giant, Nephilim, Bigfoot, are all these connected, and looking at this from 50 different angles, and I think that's where it brings a lot of credibility to it and stuff. Plus, you got some really cool Sierra sounds. Those are awesome.
Yeah, you got to
go ahead.
The dots and start connecting the dots at one point in your life, and, you know, there's a lot of people that have what they call cognitive dissonance, and that's where your mind's made up on something. You think you know something, and it's this conflict with new information processing it. So a lot of people that might see these things think they saw a bear, and maybe they did see a bear, but sometimes they're just, their mind won't process something different. They've made up their mind of what they think they are. They're either an ape in the woods, knocking on trees, or they're not. And there's some that say they're befriending them. And I think the ones we were involved with up at our camp were probably befriending us, but they bring us gifts. They did all kinds of things, but they wouldn't come out and expose themselves to us. They just wouldn't. I mean, we saw them a few times, just glimpses of them, but my goodness, these things are so elusive, and they're so very, 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 very fast. You wouldn't believe how fast these things can move. But they have a voice mechanism, which is so superior to ours, I think they can mimic anything. You mentioned the first part of the introduction here that your friend heard the name Chester, was it? Called out.
Yeah, it sounded like his voice and his dad and I think my wife, they thought it was him, and it wasn't.
Yeah. Oh, well, people like are hearing their dogs are being called. They're hearing people that aren't even around. Really, these things can do that. I believe they have a great capability of mimicking, and it's their voice mechanism is so superior to ours. I have a theory that maybe they have more than two vocal cords, and I'm not sure. Of course, we'll never know until we actually can study one somehow, but they have a way. There was a time, I wrote about this in my first book, when we thought our whole camp outside our little shelter was being tore up. The food we packed in on the mules and barrels and stuff like that, all that was being tore up, and we looked out there a little later, and nothing had changed, nothing moved. Well, what happened? They hypnotize us all? I mean, do we all imagine this? Or did they create that sound with their vocal mechanism? There's high-pitched electrical sounds we hear up there. There's besides the lights we saw. So I think there could also be a UFO connection to these things, which would lend itself
to
the alien
intervention. That's what Stan Gordon was saying, too. And he was saying the same thing. And, you know, he had some stuff. His was more, I mean, it went from friendly to Bigfoot to, you know, this is almost wondering if that whole ridge might not want to live around. That ridge just looked like some kind of demonic portal, because it was hard to separate real animal from Bigfoot, from UFO, to, okay, maybe I shouldn't be living on this ridge.
is what I'm thinking the safest thing. Now, if it is the quantum theory thing that you're talking about, and there is, you know, a spiritual aspect to the whole Bigfoot thing, it would explain some of the experiences I've had. I know I was about 3 years ago. I was in the woods with my wife. I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around it. Two sets of eyes, bright yellow, no light on them. And we're looking through night vision at these things. And I got one good whoop, which I sent up to the OBF, and it matched some of the whoops out of there from that same ridge. But I can't even accept what I saw. If you ask me what it was, I mean, right now I've asked my wife and a friend of mine who was with me. I said, did we really even see that? It just, it totally twists your thinking. And I think that's part of what's kind of cool about it. But, you know, it just, it was so hard to accept that these eyes are, and, you know, I sit there and, you know, I read everyone's, you know, some cricket in Zimbabwe can see in the middle of the night. So therefore, the Bigfoot's like the cricket. And, you know, I think some of that's just an explaining away of they don't want to accept maybe that there's something more to it than just an ape running around in the woods hiding from everybody. So,
right.
But, you know, as far as, you know, the if these things have the abilities that they do seem to at times, certainly they're bigger, faster, smarter, stronger than any other animal in the woods. I don't know if there was a Alaska show on Discovery 5 years ago, and these guys said this grizzly landed on the shore. They watched it, it sniffed up in the air, and it took off, and a Bigfoot showed up. There's nothing these things can't take down. So could they? Why aren't they touching humans? And this is where I think the spiritual aspect, for me at least, you know, it seems like there's some kind of barrier that blocks that. But, you know, I don't know why these things, maybe they are if you read Pilates' books. But what do you think holds these things back from
the bad one?
Huh? Yeah, the bad ones are where you're – the bad ones are in the Yosemite area where you're going in the Sierra Sounds. So you must have the one patch of good ones that are in that area because he says –
well,
he read his book there,
you
know, and you don't want to go in that area.
Well,
but what do you,
you
what,
know,
do you, what do you think that
being,
it would be?
Well, I think we're talking over each other here, but I think you know, the Bible also says we have guardian angels. So there's some of these things that probably are not bad, and they probably would like for us to learn more about what's going on, like Christ wanted us to learn. The bad ones, well, maybe they're eating people. That's what the Native American lore. So they took their women to breed, and they took babies to eat sometimes. And that's, I'm not going to say that's where David Pilates goes, but, you know, these people that are missing, that he talks about, there's no answer to how that happened to some of them. But I don't want to connect David with Bigfoot. He don't want to be connected.
No, I know, no, and he doesn't want it either. But, you know, the thing is I, when you're, it's, even if there's no spiritual aspect, no quantum physics aspect, these things are bigger, faster, and smarter than anything on land, and everything's terrified of them. So why not just harvest what's available? I'll tell you right now, if I'm 85 years old and I'm in a walker, I ain't going into the deep woods, in at least in the Yosemite area, because to me, I'm like an open target. I'm an easy target. And I sit there, and I wonder, why have more people been missing? Why? What keeps these things at bay, even the, quote, bad ones? Because, you know, they're afraid to show themselves. I know if a bear was here, a black bear, a grizzly, and other animals, they ain't afraid. You're getting charged. I've been charged by buffalo. I mean, you know, I mean, it's, they're not going to take it. They're going to charge at you. And but these things, that they just sit back here and chuck rocks at you, sticks at you. It was like 5 years ago, we were in the Sabine River bottoms in Louisiana. A friend was taking a leak, turns around and gets hit in the face with a stick. Well, if you can... I've been roared at like a lion down there, and it was, I got the message. You know, we were armed, but you're sitting there, okay, if this thing can hit me with a stick, then it can hit me with a 40-pound boulder. You know, so what keeps them in your mind from just, you know, ransacking all wildlife, all people, and, you know, what? Why do they just stay back there, it was my thing.
Somewhere we're, well, we are God's children. And I think we have been given dominion on earth, and these things know that. And if you know who you are as a human, made in the image of God, that's as a creator, you can, you got to believe this within your soul, that you can just say something to these things and they're going to go away. They don't come around that easy. But anyway, I think
that's an excellent point. And I was telling one of the guys out west there that, you know what, your guns are nice, but you might want to keep the name of Jesus, because you know when you see something that's startling, and I've seen one time, and it's startling. You never get it out of your head. And you realize that, you know, even a little chimp-sized one could tear you up. You know, you take all the weapons you can get. So, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, my opinion of these things is they are sapient people, like we are. They're not like we are. They're half of what we are. And that's probably from eons and eons of crossbreeding, inbreeding with indigenous people has diluted some of them into more human-like characteristics than others. What we dealt with up in the Sierras, I have to this day to know what it was, but they were huge. We got some huge somethings up there, beings, walked on two legs with big feet and huge voices. They were interacting with us for a reason. What that reason is, I don't know, unless it's so I could talk to you today. It could have been for that. But they were. It's got documented. I would encourage anybody who starts having some type of interaction with these things to document what's going on. That way you don't question yourself later. You write it down and you know it happened, or record it like we did. Al Berry, the investigative reporter, went in. He started documenting everything, started writing it down, and he was looking for a hoax so bad. He fought with that to the day he died, I think, wanting to establish that somebody had to pull that over on us. It would have been easier to explain if a human did it. But there were no humans back there at that time. We know that pretty much. So I got off track again. Sorry, Todd.
Oh, no, it's all right. I mean, you're dealing with 45 years plus of being out and, you know, squeezing it into an hour. And so when you've been out there, you've never felt as, you know, like you were necessarily, you know, in a place you shouldn't be. Have you ever felt that, or is it just most of the time it's just like you knew, hey, they're not going to bother us, so we don't bother them?
Well, it's not. I wouldn't call it a bother like some people would. I was up there in 2011. The cryptolinguist and I, Scott Nelson, been up there three times that summer, a week at a time. Went out and restocked and put supplies in. And say it again. Well, after three trips, nothing happened. Nothing was going on. And nothing you could definitely say was a Bigfoot. I mean, things went on, but you couldn't say it was a Bigfoot unless you... I don't call it a Bigfoot unless you got some really solid something going on, the chatter or the prints or something. And so he left to go back to his teaching job in Missouri. And I want to go back up there again. Maybe these things aren't around anymore. And I went up there, and I had a guy scheduled to go with me, one of the hunters that usually go up there, and he backed out at the last minute, so I was going to go up there by myself. And so I did. And that's the wrong thing to do, really, because you don't know what's going to happen. Not that I was afraid of these things, but there's bear, there's mountain lions, there's all kinds of rattlesnakes. My gosh, I got a headband made out of a 52-inch rattlesnake, 9.5 buttons on it that we shot on the trail up there. And but I went back up there in 2011, and mosquitoes were so bad that the shelter wasn't doing well at all from the snow load from the winter before. So I set up a little tent that we had stocked up there just for these occasions, and mosquitoes were so bad I thought, I'm going to get in the tent and read a book or something. So I got inside the tent, started reading. This was still daylight, too. I heard this pop outside of me. I thought it was a tree knock at the time. It sounded like a gunshot going off right outside my tent. Wow, that'll wake you up. It jerks the slack right out of you, tell me. Especially when you're by yourself. You know, that's generally they're announcing. When they announce something, they usually do it with a big bang. Well, this was a bang. Well, I waited a couple minutes. I went out and I just started talking to them because I knew that's the sign they give you. They'll pop something like that. I have a theory on that in my new book, too. How that happens or how it might happen. It's called energy and not a wood knock necessarily. But anyway, I went out there waving mosquitoes off of me with this towel, just kept on trying to coach them in, saying, you know, I know you're there. Just don't come back and scare me later. Just show me yourself now so I can learn more about you. I've been doing this for so long, 40 years at the time. And that was called 40 Years in the Wilderness, which is that chapter in my first book. that was the last thing I wrote about, was that event in 2011. And nothing went on until I went in the tent, started reading again, checked my recorder. It was active, ready to go, put brand new lithium batteries in it, and everything ready to go in case something happened after it got dark. Well, sure enough, 10 o'clock that night, something bipedal was tromping right around my tent, just between me and the stove, and I was about 15 feet away from this old stove we packed in years before. And I yelled out at it, and it stopped, and I hear it tromping again, you know. And when they tromp, I mean, it's like a two-legged elephant, you know, walking around. And I heard this chatter going on, and not right there, but probably 50 yards away or so, I heard the chatter going on, like one of them telling this one not to do whatever he's I think he might have been looking for food that I didn't leave out. I didn't think about it. I really didn't. But all of a sudden, I just kept talking to it, saying, I told you not to come back here. I tried my tape recorder. Batteries were dead. And a brand new lithium battery. It's like I couldn't get to record. So I started writing things down, my little notebook. And anyway, it came right up to the tent, stood there, heard it, and it was just gone. So it wasn't, I didn't sleep much, I got to tell you, but it wasn't until about 4 o'clock that morning when I heard this electronic sound going on right outside the tent. I have no idea what that was. They threw in the vocal mechanism, if it was a UFO or whatever it was, but I don't know what it was, but that's all that happened. And as soon as it got daylight, I packed up and left because I brought food in for 3 days, but I solved the question that I had, which is, are they still around? And I knew they were. And I didn't want to go through a whole day and another night or two there just to answer the question that had already been answered. But last year I went up, and this is in 2016, last July, and my wife and I went up on horseback and went in, packed for a couple of days, and we set up the tent. Oblong light went by our tent, control light, right through, manipulating through the trees, and we watched it for several seconds before it just went down and dissipated. And I have no idea what that was, or other than it was controlled, so it had to be, well, it was flying, so I guess you could call it an unidentified flying object. But it was probably 2-3 feet oblong. It wasn't a bright light like could put your eyes out, but it was glowing. And so something's still going on up there, and I'm going to try to get up there again this summer and do a little more research.
It amazes me that – so that's been – so you've been in that area what? So I'm guessing, geez, it's 70s. It's been 40-some years. So there's potential – I would think they know you by now. I mean, obviously, you know, I hear people say, well, I wear the same hat all the time or wear the same whatever, but – you know, they know you're not there to harm them, and if they're that smart, then I'm guessing they're probably, you know, remember you. And here comes Ron again with his lithium cordless.
Well, I don't doubt that at all. The same family group, assuming they age like we do, which they may not. If they are interdimensional, which I got to assume they may have that characteristic, some of them anyway. If they're interdimensional, when they get out of our dimension, they're not aging like we do. So. They could come
that's
back.
Interesting.
You know, how they stay gone so long, come back and still know who you are. I mean, here I am, 75 now, and I was 29 when all this started going on. And it's just, how could they still?
I had no idea you were that old. You do not come across like that. You're, you know what? I mean, I'm fighting couch potato syndrome now, and just sitting in a beanbag chair eating Cheetos and. And I look at you, I look at Joe Taylor, who's just, you know, he's got some physical stuff, but man, it's like, you guys are like sharper than I am. So, and I'm just turned 50, so, but, you know, I think it's awesome that you're doing what you're doing, and I think it's cool that you've been able to go around the world, and, you know, as far as I see what you've been to Bolivia, you've been to Peru, with Joe Taylor, Marzulli, Brian Forrester, but have you done any actual Bigfoot stuff in the woods anywhere other than going to like conferences in Russia and such? Or
Yeah, I speak of Russia. I spoke at the Barber Museum of National Science in Moscow with a couple professors and who came from here. He's talking about the hominids that probably exist. And they actually transferred us clear across over into Siberia, where we went into looking for the Yeti over there, the wild man, they call it. And that's what I did there. They took us way back into the wilderness to a cave where supposedly these things are being seen and hide out. I found a track back there inside the cave, but
that's awesome.
Because they took us to the cave, we couldn't really say that that it was real. And that's what they wanted us to say, but we just couldn't do that when we was led to the cave. Had we discovered it on our own, maybe so. Mm-hmm. But the Peru and Bolivia with L.A. is what really opened my eyes up to the enigmas that could be associated with these beings.
So you're saying it's a possibility there's a connection even between the red-haired Paracas possible giant people that maybe have came from the Levant from back in the Middle East area at one point, and the Giants of the Bible and the Bigfoot, and that would be they're all the DNAs, being messed with?
Well, the Nephilim, if they're part human, which they would be because they're from the side of the maternal side of the DNA is the mitochondrial DNA, and that's the female side. And that lends itself to something that could never find the nuclear DNA, which is the male counterparts. You could determine who the father was. That's from an unknown gene. And that's kind of profound. Out of 224 billion samples, they could not connect that counterpart to
the sample. And when you look at it that way.
Yeah, that's
we look at it that way. They just, again, you're rewriting books and you're upsetting the apple cart, and people have, there's always money and power connected to it. And it's not just, it's bad science. It comes down to livelihoods and people looking bad. And, it's sad because true science is, about research and okay, here's what we know is true. And, you learn some new stuff and you add to it. But instead, it's, Oh, we were wrong, and we really look bad. So let's bury this stuff. Which it's that way in every realm, from cryptozoology to paleontology to archaeology. It's the same vein. It's all this. It's everything's nice and fixed and controlled, and I like it crazy. And I think God has built this world that there's plenty of mysteries solved, even for thousands of years. We're not going to be able to figure it out. Should Jesus not return, and I believe he will, but, I think that's what you're looking at, and I think that's what makes it fascinating. But so there's a connection. It's just crazy to think that the Paracas skulls, which are elongated and red-haired, and an area where people probably had mostly black hair, and, were like the Indians in Central and South America, and these hominids, Nephilim, whatever you want to call them, Bigfoot-like creatures – are similar in that they're all from possibly the same source, somebody somewhere, and messing with the genetics, and it's fascinating. I think the technology is going to make it even more solid on that realm.
If you follow the trail on up into from South America and Central America, the Incas used to war with the Mayan and the Aztec up there. And then you got stories from them saying they warred with giants in the north, which would have been up here. Well, then you got the Lovelock Caves where they red-haired giants. Well, okay, there you are. It's a trail of Texas all the way up in here. And there's a guy named Jim Vera who has a whole bunch of stuff on giants that have been found here in North America. But it's all been, they've all been confiscated once they're found and taken away by the government. So it's an interesting tale. There's also the Martindale mummy, which was found in Yosemite, actually, in 1898, I think it was. And Ripley's got a hold of that, but that's where I lost the trail of it. But it was a 7-foot tall female, which her counterpart would have been 8-foot tall, mummified in a cave in Yosemite, holding a baby. Then you've got the minaret skull, which Al Berry and I went in to investigate one time, trying to find out more about this skull. Dr. Denton, who was taking a group of Boy Scouts in there on a camping trip. The mule that they packed in with dug up this skull, which is huge, but it was a human-like skull. Well, he, thinking he did the right thing, sent it off to UCLA, and that's where we lost track of it. It was just not there anymore. And things like that happen. And you get these things being seen nowadays all over the United States, and people, how they can just dismiss that is because they've got their paradigm made up that it's just a big wood ape in the forest beaten on trees. And that's not what they are. I can pretty much guarantee that.
Well, it seems like depending on where you go in the world, in places, there's different, you know, some places seem more. I mean, I got a friend who's basically the Dr. Doolittle Bigfoot. I've never seen anything like it. And they were stacking. He says he noticed the pizza boxes he was just dumping out in the garbage, and he noticed they were stacked, and then they were taking the crusts out of them. And he had a muddy handprint at one point on his car. And the thing is then you have those, and then you have other ones where, you know, people are seeing crazy lights, you know, disappearing, and, you know, others are more animal. It's just, it's like there's so many different facets. I don't think it's, you can just when you think you got, I got to figure it out this time. I mean, I started out thinking, okay, demons. Then I thought, well, I'm ape. Okay, now, okay, Nephilim. So, you know, the thing is there's so many facets. And everywhere in the world, I went to New Guinea, and I'm going to be going here again here shortly, and they're there. Every single country that has any type of woods, and these things need cover. They're not running around like a ghost in your backyard and your house and your cars. They need wood cover. They seem to need food and water, but they certainly need cover, and they're not strictly just some kind of spirit running around, because otherwise you'd be seeing them in your yard. You'd be seeing them in your house and your buildings like you would a spirit. So it's fascinating. What other places have you gone?
If they are interdimensional, Todd, they could actually go out of your sight and you wouldn't see them, and so they wouldn't have to have the cover. These people that say they see them cloaking, I don't think they're all crazy anymore. I mean, I got a personal friend of mine that just saw one, and I believe every word she says is just phenomenal, but she wasn't even a believer until she saw this thing. And I've known people for a long time that say they saw this. These things are spirit beings, like we all are spirit beings, and energy doesn't die. So what happens to it? Can it change its frequency to go to a different level? Yes, it can. And that's what my book gets about, too, is Quantum Bigfoot, how if they can change their vibrational frequency to a different level that we can't see, and that's possible. We only see within a certain light frequency. And it's like Einstein said, nothing can go faster than the speed of light. Well, that's right. Mass can't. But once you change into energy, it doesn't die, and there you are. You're somewhere. How are you existing at that point? You're existing as pure energy.
One thing I wanted to ask you before, as I'm whatever, is that I know some people, and I'm not just going to go into names, that have, and I think this adds a spiritual element of it, that there are people, unlike any subject I've ever seen, other than being getting high or using drugs or drinking or something like that, where they so OCD that they dump everything for Bigfoot. And you don't see it in other realms, you know, with other monsters. And it just seems like there's more people that are willing to just – it's. And to me, that's because there's something drawing them that they maybe don't even recognize, which may be what you're talking about, the spiritual element of it. But there's that, and I just sit there, and I'm amazed that I know people that have lost it because of Bigfoot. I mean, literally to where they went kind of nutsy, or they went into so deep into occultic stuff that they weren't the same person. But you don't get that with a deer. You don't get that with obsession of deer hunting and bear hunting and fishing to where you just go nutsy. And I can think of two people right offhand, and I won't say it, that just went, in my opinion, just crazy. But this, again, points to possible another, okay, they're not just animals. And, you know, I'm amazed. It's cool that you've been able to keep your head all these years and not go nutsy, I guess that's what I'm saying. But
I try to tell people, Todd, above all, keep an open mind. Don't have your paradigm fixed. and listen to all, study your history, study the quantum physics, study classical science, study all these different areas and see where it all comes together. And that's what I've tried to do in my book. And what I've done in my book, I think. It took me 2 years to write that.
I think you've done a good job. It's definitely not your average Bigfoot book, but I tell you what, it's well worth reading. And, you know, if you keep an open mind, I think, you know, it's like you got to be willing to face the stuff. You can't just bury it and not deal with stuff. You don't solve problems in your own life like that. And, you know, I think if you're really, truly interested in the, you know, I don't care how bad someone wants it to be an ape or whatever or a Nephilim or whatever, you have to be willing, okay, what if I'm wrong? Okay, what are the other angles here? What is the possibility that, you know, it's this or that? And I think that's really pretty cool. But is there anything currently that you're planning, any current projects or future projects you're working on or going to be doing here in the future, maybe another book?
Just the conventions. I speak at those. I took one in November last month out to Ocean Shores here in Washington. I live in Washington. The Olympics is where I study now, mostly, unless I go into California, which I'm going to go to California next week, actually. But I won't be able to get in the mountains. Too much snow up there right now. But I'm speaking in Kelso, Washington here in January. I got a couple more interviews this month, and then I think I'm off for the season until January. And I got a few others scheduled. I go into, I think it's Virginia or North Carolina or something like that in June of next year. I forgot. I got to look at my calendar to tell you about those things. But anybody wants to look at my website, it's ronmorehead.com. That's MOREHEAD, and or BigfootSounds.com. Either one will get you there. And I also started a Bigfoot store. We can buy products. And I've never been in this for the money, but I've spent a small fortune looking for these creatures.
Yeah, you have. I work for the airlines, and I flew to New Guinea, and I still spent a small fortune going without that. So people don't realize how expensive it is to travel. And I can't even imagine how much you spent.
Well, it's like a gold mine, you know, the way you make a small fortune in gold mines, but a large fortune in it. And that's, I've done that, too. So anyway, I was fortunate enough to do very well in business and be able to afford to make these trips and to do this study and to devote my life to it now. That's what I do. And that's all I do. I retired from business a few years ago and enjoying myself.
You are. I mean, that is. I think it's cool. You're keeping your brain going and you're keeping your body. I did not know you were that old, to be honest with you. Now,
well,
I guess I should
diet.
Have figured 45.
Well,
you couldn't have been 10.
Cheetos aren't good for you, I got to tell you. My wife's a nutritionist, so she's a therapist on different scales. She's just phenomenal at keeping me healthy and for as long as I can be healthy. And so I think that also, I wrote about the pineal gland in my book. And the pineal gland has to be decalcified because our culture and our diets have calcified our pineal gland. And that's the third eye that the Egyptians depict in their hieroglyphs of stuff. And if you can get that third eye open, you'll know what Christ was talking about, because that's the oneness that he talked about. I wish that all could be one with the Father as I am one with the Father. We are all one energy. We just don't realize it. It's something we have to study and meditate on and to learn to walk on water, basically. We're not cigar. Anyway, we think we're smarter than them. These things are...
Yeah.
More in tune to anything than we are. And that's what I've decided anyway. And that's my
paradigm. True. It's, well, Ron, I'll tell you what, it was great having you on. About ready to end the show. I probably should have kept you on longer, but everyone, thank Ron for coming on. I appreciate you coming on here, Ron. And I tell you what, just stay in touch. Thanks for coming on. I hope you write another book, because it was pretty fascinating. And your life's been fascinating. It's an inspiration to every couch potato out there. And I'm hoping that I will, 75, be as spry and motivated and hopefully we'll solve this thing and go on to some other mysteries. But, again, thanks, Ron. I appreciate it. And we will head out here. No problem.
Thank
you have a great night, sir.
You've been listening to Jurassic Park Radio with host Todd Jurassic. Find us on Facebook and at JurassicPark.net. Send your own mysterious encounters and stories to ToddJurassic@gmail.com. God bless, and thank you for listening.
Now, your favorite music apps are available on Contour from Cox. Go from watching a musical to listening to your favorite music. Enjoy a country western and then a country jam. Go from a love story to love songs. Or go from action flicks to something that makes you feel like an action hero. Now with Contour from Cox.